I am recording two podcasts in 1 week. We're back to normal. It's noon on Thursday. I think we're going to get this thing up in the afternoon on Thursday. I assume we are. The Wizards won a basketball game. They beat the Magic. They never beat the Magic. That's the state of Wizards basketball right now. The Wizards just snapped a six-game losing streak to the Magic. They got swept by the Magic last year and lost the first two this year, but they beat the Magic, the unbeatable Orlando Magic. Things are going great. Bradley Beal's back from his injury, and I have the podcast guest. You know, they say like Norm MacDonald is the best talk show guest or Bill Burr is the best talk show guest. Well, Ben Standig is the best Wizards podcast guest, and I got him again.
Yeah. Fun fact, you told me that in your previous podcast that you did with the great Ava Wallace that you guys mentioned me in a way that was like, okay, well, I need to go hear this because you said – it was like you guys were like kind of making fun of the fact that despite the fact that I don't actually cover this team anymore, that I still am actively paying attention and more so. And so like I could have just said to you, what point of the podcast was this mentioned? And I was like, eh, I don't want to do that. Plus, I don't even want to like tell Fred I'm doing this. It's like ridiculous. So I care. So I just listened to it, which was fine. It was good stuff out of the both of you. It was literally the last 30 seconds of the podcast. Like literally, I listened for 45 minutes to the last for the last 30 seconds. I was like, oh my God.
You know, I wish I could say that I did that intentionally, but you didn't ask.
I did not ask. I was embarrassed to ask. Apparently, not embarrassed to say it
now. Right, You're embarrassed to ask privately, but you'll declare it on a podcast that tens of people listen to.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I think it was I believe I used the term mainlining Wizards coverage. I believe that was the phrase I said.
You did.
And I stand by it.
No, it's fair. I'll be honest, like nobody cares about this, but like, you know, I heard you in part of your conversation, you were saying that, you know, you don't — I think you said this on that podcast. I think we've talked about it before, that you purposely have avoid covering baseball because you don't want your fandom to get ruined by that. Right. I think you guys talked about that on the podcast, right?
I must have, because that's exactly how I feel. So once I say something, it completely goes out of my head on a podcast. I have no idea whether I say something. I don't know if this is the same for you, but I have no idea whether I say something on a podcast or just in conversation to someone, because, you know, Ava and I are good friends. We talk a lot. You and I are good friends. We talk all the time. I don't remember what I say to you in conversation versus what I say to you on a podcast, which I guess shows how organic our podcasts are. But I don't remember. I don't remember if I said that to you. But either way, well, that is true.
Yeah, and so I bring this up because, like, you know, for me, like, I basically at some point have covered essentially all the teams in town that I grew up rooting for. And, you know, I've stated, I mean, I'm emotionally dead inside, like, on multiple levels. Anyway, so the, you know, like, I have thought to myself, would it make sense to just strictly stop any team that is not the current one I'm getting paid to cover, the football team? Should I just reverse, like, never cover them again and not even talk about them in these public ways and only focus on them as, if I'm interested in a fan way? Like, could I go back to those ways back in the day? I don't know if it's even conceivable. And in this case, I really don't think it's conceivable because of the whole seeing how the sausage is made and, you know, just whatever. But yes, that is why on some level I still keep going here. It's not that I'm a fan by any stretch. It's just that I'm invested based on decades of giving a crap.
Yeah, there's no way. I think it's irreversible. Once you cover a team like on a beat, you just look at the league completely differently. I look at, you know, I said I've never covered — I covered college baseball when I was in college. I was a reporter covering the Mizzou baseball team when I was in college, but I've never covered MLB for one second of my life. And I still look at MLB differently because I cover the NBA. Because, you know, there are overlaps on team building. There are overlaps on covering athletes. And, you know, I look at players across all sports. I look at the humanity of players so much more because you get to know players. And so you think of players as people more than you do when you're just like a 16-year-old fan, you know, just rooting for guys in a TV or from the stands, you know? And so that carries over so much for me, independent of the sport now. I mean, that's not even just a basketball thing. So my fandom of other sports is already affected by doing this job. By the way, I think that's a good thing. I like being able to look at the humanity. I like being able to look at a guy who is injury prone and not say, oh, he's so soft, he won't get out there, and think, man, it's probably killing that guy a gazillion times more than it's killing any of us that he can't get out there. Like, I like that perspective. But I don't need to be in the Yankees locker room. I want to sit there, I want to root for the Yankees and be happy.
Yeah, no. Like I said, I think there's something to that. I think for me originally it was just the idea of, like, one, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And the only thing I'm good at talking about is sports, and even that's debatable. So how could I, like, somehow get into to do this? And anyway, one thing led to another, and, you know, I never thought I would ever get close to anything I'm doing now, or, you know, have these opportunities. I'm grateful for that. But at the same time, yes, like so many of the teams, I'm just like, oh my God. Why did I do this to myself? But anyway, what are you going to do?
All right, here's an opportunity. I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk about Bradley Beal. How about that? I'm Wizards After Dark.
I like it.
I'm going to read some of these quotes. These are from Wednesday night after the game. So Beal missed 5 consecutive games because of a hip injury, which he revealed after the game on Wednesday. The Wizards had him listed as being out with a hip contusion. He said after the game that it was because of neuralgia paresthetica. Which I misunderstood when he first said it and thought it was notalgia paresthetica, which is a back thing. This is a thigh and side of the thigh and hip thing. Beal said it's a day-to-day thing. He missed 5 games. He was a game-time decision and basically gave it a go during pregame warm-ups before those games and then couldn't go. And then he was a game-time decision on Wednesday night against Orlando, ended up playing. Played 30 minutes on a minutes limit, had 26 points, played well, moved well. Anyway, he said after the game, though, it's a day-by-day thing. I could wake up tomorrow and be in excruciating pain for all I know. It's ultimately my decision, and it's nobody else's. These are all different quotes. Nobody knows my body better than me. Our training staff does an excellent job of just trusting me and being around them and kind of gaining their trust. We all have the same mentality when it comes to me playing. There are times I'm going to be hard-headed and play probably when I shouldn't. But with something like this that can possibly be holding me out longer than what I really want, I'm definitely going to play it smart and kind of be selfish. And when he says be selfish, he means sit out. That's how Beal views these things. He talks about it kind of in that light all the time whenever he has to sit, because he very pridefully likes to play as many minutes and as many games as he possibly can. He had that 194-game consecutive games played streak from 2017 to 2019. He said after the game as well, part of me didn't want to play, but I knew I had to, or part of me tonight didn't want to play, but I knew I had to play. It's one of those things where you just got to push through eventually, and I was able to tolerate a lot of it tonight. I didn't have any of the pains I felt in the past week and a half, so I feel good from that standpoint. Says he's cupping, says he's dry needling. There are more quotes. I have a story up on The Athletic DC, which you can go check out with all of Beal's quotes and some analysis of the situation as well, and some analysis of how the Wizards have handled injury situations that, you know, are I would say related, just in that they're on the fence injury situations in the past. Check that out in The Athletic DC. If you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, you can sign up, by the way, at theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark for $3.99 a month. That's theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark. Benjamin, long time of me just talking just now. What do you make of those quotes when you hear them?
Well, first of all, what's the name of the hip issue again?
Oh man, now I gotta call it up again.
Well, that's all right.
Neuralgia paresthetica.
Wow. When you first said that, I thought that was like the name of like a Romanian gymnast from the '80s or something. That is a name. I have no idea what that means, but it doesn't sound
good. I could see like neuralgia sticking the landing.
Yeah, yeah.
It would work.
100%. Or maybe it's a player on some European team that Giannis Antetokounmpo blocked the shot of back in the day or something. I don't know. All right. Anyway, so I pulled up the playoff standings while you were talking. So the Wizards are right this minute. They are 3.5 back of the 10 seed. They're also 3.5 ahead of the team in last place in the Eastern Conference, the Detroit Pistons. And I think that, you know, my perspective has been, look, you know, and I think I suspect yours as well and others, like, they should stop focusing on the 10 seed and focus more on just the broader picture of this team. Now, Bradley Beal may not necessarily view it that way, because we don't know what the broader picture, what the future is with him and this team. That's obviously part of the conversation we've all had. So he may be looking at this like, well, look, I need to get back out there. But, you know, both it's just a pride thing. This is what I do. I had those points earlier in my career where people considered me to be injury prone, and I needed to prove that wasn't the case. I think we are way past that. I don't think that's the case anymore, but it could be in his head. There's also things like, I don't know, the All-NBA situation that I'm sure we may talk about in a minute, but just like the idea of, hey, he's had an incredible year. He wants to continue to do it and finish strong and all that, and I get all that. But like the idea that that it's up to him, that's the part that really stands out to me. Like, I understand it to a degree. Only the person can know for sure the pain that they're feeling. That applies to any of us. But like, they have coaches, they have general managers, they have ownership, they have people who are there to say, hey, you need to, we need to be more cautious here. If you're feeling any kind of pain, if you're not 100% or even close to it or whatever, we don't need to be playing you right now because we need to look at the bigger picture. And realistically, the Wizards should be thinking that bigger picture is next year, not getting to the 10 seed, even if that's a continually stated goal. Doesn't mean the players shouldn't try and all that stuff. But, you know, it just seems kind of nuts. So, I mean, I hope he's okay. I hope he's not doing any crazy damage. I hope he didn't wake up in excruciating pain today, as he stated it was conceivable. But at the same time, none of that sounds great, and I really would hope that somebody would step in and say, hey, man, we can't have you out there. You're too valuable to us. You're too valuable for yourself. We don't need you getting further injury here to chase this 10 seed, which, you know, whatever we may be saying publicly, privately, realistically, cannot be some goal that we're pushing so hard to potentially risk you getting hurt worse.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's proper perspective. There are two ways to play through injury. I'll add the other side for it for the sake of this. There are two very broad circumstances in which you can be playing while, air quotes, hurt, right? I remember Derek Jeter used to say, when you're injured, you can't play. When you're hurt, you can play. And to bring it back to the Yankees analogies, there are two different kinds of very, very broad scenarios. The first one is you're playing hurt, and whatever the part of your body that's hurt can get worse by you playing. The other part is you're playing hurt, and you can't worsen the injury, which there are certain injuries like that, which you can play through. Sure. And the only question is, can you withstand the pain? And if you can personally withstand the pain, you're not at necessarily higher risk than you would be otherwise, than you would be in a normal situation by playing through that injury. I don't know what that scenario is here. I will say, if Beal is 1% more likely to worsen this injury, then I don't see why you would play him when you're 18 and 32 when you have to be thinking about next year. And remember, injuries are not binary in that you're hurt. So if you're going to get hurt, if you're going to make things worse, then it's because of that injury. I mean, if you're playing in pain, you know, you could be favoring, you could have a compensatory injury. You know, if you're playing in pain because your right hip or right thigh or whatever it is with Beal is really bothering you and you're playing through that pain, so you subconsciously start favoring your left side, well, you're a little bit more likely for an injury on the left side of the body because you've been overcompensating from the pain on your right side, right? So there's a lot more nuance that goes into this than just, is he more likely to hurt the hip? Is he equally as likely to hurt the hip as if he didn't have this injury at all? Is he just playing through pain? If he doesn't have pain, is the compensatory aspect of this not going to be there, so it's fine? You know, I don't really know all the answers to that question, to those questions yet. I would like to ask certain versions of them tomorrow pregame before they play Golden State on Friday night. I will. I'm sure Ava will. I'm sure other people will. But, you know, it's just hard to look at a scenario where the guy who's leading the league in scoring, who is clearly your best player, is playing hurt with 24 games left on a team that's 18 and 32. And by the way, you mentioned 3.5 games out of the 10th spot in the Eastern Conference. they're tied for fifth right now for fifth best lottery positioning. That's the important number. You know, like you talk about perspective. That's part of the perspective for next year. Go get your pick. You know, go get your pick. So I'm not sitting here saying this is what they should do. This is what they shouldn't do. But I am saying that if there is a greater chance of Beal getting hurt or Beal worsening the injury or Beal having a compensatory one, I don't see why he would be playing. So common sense says to me, you know, I did a story earlier this year where I spoke to Tommy Shepard, I spoke to people around the organization about the resting plan they had Russell Westbrook on. And, you know, they talked about they you know, ultimately health takes precedence over trying to win games. Now, Westbrook was playing through an injury at the time, which at the time I wrote that story, I didn't even know the effect it was having on him to that degree. You know, you see now the athleticism he's playing with and how he looked at the beginning of the year. You can tell how extreme that quad injury was and how it was affecting him the first month and a half of the season. But, you know, they talk about how ultimately the player sits if he's not feeling up to it. You know, I can't do anything more than take them at their word at that. So if that's the case, I would assume that, you know, Beal is not at risk of a further injury from doing this. But I agree with you. It's just jarring to hear the player as the final word. Because ultimately, you would hope it's the doctor's decision, you know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the sports are different. But, like, I just went through this with the Washington football team. Obviously, Alex Smith's injury, presumably people here are aware. But obviously, the former quarterback who had, you know, as horrific as the leg injury, which was threatened to lose the limb and maybe even threaten his life when it happened in 2018. But, you know, he comes back, makes an incredible comeback. But last year he played several games, but was held out late in the season, including the playoff game. And ultimately Ron Rivera, the head coach, decided that based on listening to the medical staff and to some degree seeing what he could see with Alex Smith, didn't use him, a guy who was easily his most experienced player in a playoff game. And instead Washington started a quarterback who was not even in the league 1 month prior. And I only make that point to say that you're telling me that it just, that seems more of a normal circumstance in these cases, the people in charge making the decisions on who is going to play in all kinds of ways, including health, and to hear the player here say, you know, that it's up to him. And I know NBA players tend to have a lot more power than NFL players for all the sort of obvious reasons, contractual and otherwise. But regardless, it's still kind of a jarring situation and jarring to hear for sure.
Yeah, it's not the first time it's happened in NBA history. It's not the first time I've heard players say that. It's not the first time I've heard organizations go that way. It always stands out when you hear it. I want to bring up, Ben, we got into a debate. I shouldn't say a debate. It wasn't really a debate. It was more of just a conversation in our Slack channel with you, me, and DA. It was like a couple of weeks ago about Bradley Beal's chances at All-NBA. And Beal is leading the league in scoring right now. He's averaging 31.2 points a game. I don't think he's – and the reason I bring this up now is because if he ends up missing more games for this, you know, he, as you just referenced, said there's a chance he could wake up in excruciating pain the next day. And I assume if you're in excruciating pain, as tough as Bradley Beal is, as much as he wants to play, and Lord knows he wants to play. You all right, Ben? Are you going to play through this? You playing through?
I'm good, man.
Oh, I was like, oh my God, did I lose you? He's not responding.
Oh, no, sorry. I'm right here.
But yeah, I assume as much as Bradley Beal wants to play, if he's in excruciating pain, he's not going to. So if he misses a number of games, you know, that'll affect All-NBA, even if he still qualifies for, you know, league leaders and all that. He's missed 8 games so far. That is definitely not a disqualifying number. But, I mean, I don't think he's a guarantee for All-NBA. I think he could end up being in a similar position to what he was last year. So here are some of the names that I threw in the story from this morning that are contenders for All-NBA guard. Luka Doncic is a guarantee. He's making one of those teams. James Harden is a guarantee. He's making one of those teams. Damian Lillard is a guarantee. He's making one of those teams. I'm going to say Steph Curry is damn close to being a guarantee. Kyrie has a similar issue to what I was just mentioning, where he's, I think, missed 15 games now, something like that, and that could be a problem. But Kyrie is having an unbelievable season and has a great chance. One of Chris Paul or Devin Booker, I'm going to say, is getting on there. Those guys are both having great years. The Suns legitimately have a chance to end up with the best record in the NBA. If the Suns end up with the best record in the NBA, one of those guys is getting on there.
What a story, by the way.
Unbelievable. Oh, my goodness. And if they don't end up with the best record in the NBA, they're going to end up with the second best or third best because they're a hell of a team. And those guys are having incredible seasons. Those are two great players. Chris Paul is still, my goodness, he's amazing. Donovan Mitchell, if the Suns don't end up with the best record in the NBA, it could very well be the Jazz. And Donovan Mitchell's having a really excellent year. He has a legit, I don't think he's going to get on there. You want to make a case for Donovan Mitchell? I have no problem with that. Chris Middleton is having another excellent season. Ben Simmons is having another excellent season. I think that's 10 guys. And that doesn't even get into the fact that LeBron James had dual eligibility last year at guard and forward. So if he has the same thing this year, there are voters who could slot him in as a guard. I put LeBron as a guard last year. Problem is, when you put LeBron as a guard, you only have six guard spots. It knocks off your the guy who would otherwise be your sixth guard. Kawhi Leonard had dual eligibility last year. Jimmy Butler had dual eligibility last year. You know, that's like 13 guys. There are only six spots, not including Bradley Beal. I'm not saying all those guys have a case over Beal. I don't believe that to be true. I'm just saying that I think all of those guys are going to get votes. And there are scenarios in which any of those guys could take votes away from Beal. I think it's going to be really tough for him, independent of games missed. And if he, you know, even if he ends up playing every game the rest of the year, putting up the exact same numbers, I think it's going to be tough for him. If he ends up missing more, you know, quantity matters when you're talking about the highest quality. So I don't know. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, so I think the point, I was more pro Beal gets in than you guys were, which isn't to say that I'm, pretending he's a lock, because obviously you just mentioned all the reasons, you know, all the different players involved. And, you know, I think the biggest issue is like this multi-positional aspect where guys who we would typically view as forward could somehow be voted in as a guard if somebody wanted to play around like that. My basic point on Beal was this. I think a lot of times when it comes down to these kinds of decisions, it's a perception versus a reality situation in many ways. I think the difference between for Beal this year versus last year is that exact thing, perception versus reality. Last year, he was viewed as part of a completely lousy team. And when people went to examine his numbers, they dropped him down because of things like, what did we hear so much last year? Bradley Beal stinks on defense. Look at the defensive numbers. If they were any good, you know, they stink. I can't reward a player on a lousy team and all that. That is not the narrative we've heard largely this year on Bradley Beal from the beginning. The narrative this year has been, you know, free Bradley Beal. He's an amazing player, having a great year. The team stinks. It's not his fault. Since then, he was voted in as a starter to the NBA All-Star game. We talked about this on the podcast earlier in the year. He was the talk of the league beyond LeBron and Durant and Curry. He was the guy being discussed the most of anybody because of the constant trade rumor, you know, ideas. They need to get rid of him. And I think from that, he has been talked about in such high regard this year that I think that the team's suffering is not nearly as relevant as it was last year. Now, again, if he misses, you know, what do they have, 22 games left, something like that?
24.
Yeah. Okay. So like if he...
Oh, 22. Sorry, 22.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if he misses, you know, I mean, he's already now missed a few. If he misses a bunch more, look, at some point you have to play, obviously, right? And the baseline levels, people will compare numbers. It's, you know, if he doesn't play, then his scoring average won't drop. But, you know, that's the type of thing I think could be a deal breaker where somebody says, well, I would like to give it to him, but he only played this many games and somebody else played this many more. And at some point that's an issue. But I think the perception of Bradley Beal is massively different from where it was a year ago. And that perception is why I think he can get in. Now, again, there are a lot of other players, and that is going to be the challenge. But at the same point, I do think it's different than it was a year ago because of that sense of from the start of the year that he is a great player playing on a lousy team. Whereas last year, I don't think people appreciated what he was doing as much and focused more on the lousy team part.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with everything you just said. I think that's true. I just think the guard candidates are better this year. And, you know, Curry's in a similar position, but I think he gets a bump for being Stephen Curry and because he's also having a fantastic season. I mean, you look at some of the guys who are on the list this year, they weren't contenders last year. You know, Curry was hurt. Kyrie played 20 games or whatever it was. You know, Booker, that was before the Suns had their surge. So Booker was kind of playing in irrelevance there. You know, it's a really, really, really tough crop. Really tough. You know, James Harden might not make first team. I mean, amongst Doncic, Lillard, and Harden, at least one of those guys is not making first team, which is crazy. There are just so many guards putting up tremendous numbers. And Beal could make it. I mean, I think he's got a better argument than Chris Middleton, who I think is a great player. I voted for Chris Middleton for All-NBA last year. He's a great player, and he's having another fantastic season. The guy is a wildly underrated scorer. Kevin Durant is the best mid-range shooter in the league, but Chris Middleton, I think, has a case of being number two. And that guy is an outrageous scorer from everywhere on the floor. He's an unbelievable jump shooter, and he's a better facilitator than he gets credit for. You know, I would have Beal over him, but there are people who are going to disagree with me on that. There are people who are really prone to Ben Simmons because he might be the defensive player of the year. You know, there are people who are going to look at the Jazz and say, who is the best player on the team with the best record in the league? And my answer is Rudy Gobert. And I think Gobert is getting in there on third team center. But there are people who are going to say, hey, Donovan Mitchell, 25 a game, shooting 40 from three. He's having a hell of a season. Put them both on. They have the best record in the league. So I just think it's going to be hard. And when you have those three guys at the top who are absolute locks, and Curry has an argument as a lock, and there are going to be people who consider Kyrie as a lock because they're not going to care as much about the games missed. And I also think that voters are going to care less about games missed this year. And maybe this is an argument for Beal, too, if he ends up missing a significant chunk that'll keep him there. But I think voters will probably care a little less about games missed this year because of the context of the season with the crazy schedule and, you know, all the health and safety protocol stuff that's happened with so many different players. It's just not going to be easy. There are so many guys who put up numbers now, and it's just, you know, as well as I do, it's just not easy when, you know, you're doing on a team that's 18 and 32 compared to most of these guys who aren't just on playoff teams, but they're on, you know, teams that are playing 600 plus basketball, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, for sure. I mean, like I said, I mean, when the voting hits the fan, when you actually have to turn in the votes, people will look at the standings. And if the Wizards, you know, like, you know, they're about to go on this road trip, you know, I mean, they've been on a road trip, but they're about to go out west. You know, you blow these games and you know, you start putting yourself in a position where you're, you know, people say, wait, they're as close to Orlando and Detroit, two teams that have traded away and gotten rid of all their good players. They're closer to those teams than they are the teams ahead of them. I mean, absolutely, stuff like that could be a factor. But like I said, I just think if he can hold on, if he can play, as we discussed, shouldn't force it. But if he can play and the Wizards don't completely collapse here from a record standpoint more than they kind of are now, then I think the perception is going to be fine for him, but within reason. I mean, but at the same point, it's crazy the amount of players, you know, who are worthy, you know, at his position, and that's part of the deal. I guess here's the fun question is, you know, we remember what happened last year when he didn't get on that team. Now, he also last year didn't get on the All-Star team, which this year he obviously started. So maybe if he didn't make the All-NBA team, the blow wouldn't be, you know, from Team Beal wouldn't be as devastating. But if, in fact, that were to happen and people were, you know, people have to then come out and give their reasons, why didn't you vote Bradley Beal? And people say, well, he plays on a bad team. Does that change anything going forward into this offseason with Bradley Beal and how he views the idea of staying here? If 2 years in a row he's put up insane numbers, and granted, he wouldn't be getting 30 points on a game if he was playing on a team that had – other all-stars, right? I mean, that's just not how that would work. But, you know, if he's playing at a high level like this and he's going to get dinged because of the team, if that's the way people would come out and say it, which would be the likely reason, yeah, I wonder how does that factor in with any thoughts that he may have going forward. He's stated, obviously, he wants to stay here, so I'm not trying to suggest that he would force his way out. But at the same time, you know, you wonder if 2 years in a row that were to happen, you know, what would that mean for his, you know, for his mindset?
Yeah. And for what it's worth, people bring up all NBA with Beal in relation to getting a Supermax all the time. It's pretty irrelevant here. The Supermax is not necessarily a special contract for every player in the NBA. What it does is there are three different levels of max contracts on a basic level. If you've been in the league for less than 7 years, you get a max contract that starts at 25% of the salary cap. If you've been in the league for 7 to 9 years, you can get a max contract that starts at 30% of the salary cap. If you've been in the league for 10 plus years, you can get the largest max contract, which starts at 35% of the salary cap. And what the Supermax is if you're not yet a 10-year veteran, there are certain awards you can get that make you eligible for the 35% max, even though based on the time you've been in the league, you're only eligible for the 30% max. Beal, when he hits free agency in 2022, there is a reason he set up that contract that way. When he hits free agency in 2022, he'll be a 10-year veteran. He's eligible for the 35% max, whether he makes All-NBA or doesn't make All-NBA. So it doesn't really matter in terms of getting the Supermax in free agency. That's not a deal. I see people bring that up, and I just wanted to set the record straight. Ben, before we wrap up, I have to trigger you, and I imagine that saying before we wrap up, I'm going to have regrets because this conversation is probably going to last 6 hours knowing you. But the Wizards released Jerome Robinson. They waived Jerome Robinson officially on Thursday morning. They, Woj has reported they are signing Jordan Bell to a 10-day contract. David Aldridge and I reported in a story we wrote before the trade deadline that, you know, the Wizards, if they opened up a roster spot, it was very possible they bring Jordan Bell back. Bell was on a 10-day earlier this year. It was very possible they bring Bell back in some capacity, maybe a two-way, maybe a 10-day. They opened up a roster spot. They're bringing him back in a 10-day. Ben, you are more passionate about the 15th man on the Wizards roster. I don't know what the hell is going on in your background right now. But you are more passionate about 15.
Two of us. I don't know what is happening. There's like some weird noise is going on here, and I'm trying to sort it out. Sorry.
Hey, you're rummaging. You are more passionate about the 15th man on the Wizards roster than most people are about their children. So I'm just going to say, I'm just going to step away, and I'm just going to let you talk. What do you think?
I'm actually like not like. Like, I don't have, like, a big take on getting rid of Jerome Robinson or the idea that Jordan Bell would come in. I mean, look, I give Tommy Shepard credit for finding these opportunities to take advantage of, when other teams out there are looking to move players that, you know, maybe they didn't work out in their spot for whatever the reason that they hope would work here. We saw this work the most successfully, essentially, with the Davis Bertans trade, where the Spurs were looking to move his salary to do some other things, and Washington had to give up very little to get him. And then they did a similar deal with the Lakers for Mo Wagner and Bonga that cost them nothing. Similar with the Jerome Robinson deal with Isaiah Thomas, right? I have zero issue with when they try these things, even if ultimately they don't work out. I guess my thing would be, and look, in Jerome Robinson's case specifically, like at no point has it looked like there was something interesting here. Like at least with Troy Brown, you know, regardless of where his career ends up going, there were things about his game that I still do like. The passing ability, some good size, you know, whatever. It didn't work out, and maybe it's on him or whatever. I guess just with here, though, it's constantly this idea of, is the player development system that Washington has, is it strong enough to really turn players into to help them take it to another level? And then combined with the coaching situation of like the rotation we've talked about all the time. Like I said, I'm not sitting here going Jerome Robinson was hosed the way I did with, say, Troy Brown and have with others. So whatever. It's super weird that what? How many games ago was it? He played 36 minutes, right after they made the
like a week ago.
Yeah, I mean there were injuries and they made a trade, but at the same point, like you didn't have to play him 36 minutes. Went from playing 36 minutes to releasing him. Like that's weird for sure. So yeah, I'm not like oh wow, this is such a ridiculous move. I guess I would say on some level they've had Jordan Bell up and down. I don't quite get why. I mean, I know Gafford is hurt, but like I don't know, are they short bigs right now? Like I don't, and even if they are, like whatever, I guess I would be more like, why not bring in somebody else who haven't observed yet to try them out and see what they do. Maybe they become the your random guy who we look at and think, oh, he's pretty interesting. Maybe he should be back next year in some capacity. That would be my only quibble on it. But beyond that, I guess it's just more of, Jerome Robinson, the player. I didn't see that much. I think the same for you as a player. But the lack of player development, it feels like consistently with these players and the rotation aspect, it just like sort of that was kind of the bigger aspect of it for me, along with like why Jordan Bell.
Yeah, I just think the inconsistency between the front office and the coaching staff and how they handle certain players is pretty obvious and, kind of weird. Jerome Robinson doesn't get his fourth-year option picked up, and then he enters the rotation over Troy Brown, who does get his fourth-year option picked up.
Yes.
And Troy Brown ends up out of the rotation. Jerome Robinson ends up out of the rotation for the majority of the year, but the timing of it was just strange to see Jerome Robinson play actual rotation minutes and Troy Brown not. Robinson then doesn't play at all, essentially for a month and a half or a little more than a month and a half. And then he jumps back into the rotation and he didn't, Beal was hurt and they had other injuries, obviously, but they didn't need to play him 30 minutes. I mean, Bonga was getting DMPs and clearly Bonga was more a big, greater part of their future. Even if Bongo's a restricted free agent after this year walks, even if they have no interest in re-signing him, clearly he's a greater part of their future because they just released Jerome Robinson with 22 games to go in the season, right? So it's just weird to then see Robinson get released so they can sign a 10-day guy, which is fine. He was shooting 29% from the field. I mean, what are you going to do? But it's weird to see him play, start three consecutive games over, say, Bonga or Garrison Matthews, or it's not even the starting, it's the minutes total. And then he gets released. There is an inconsistency there in which the coaching staff and the front office are not on the exact same page about specific players. And it stands out in moments like this.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, and again, just to compare it to the team that I cover primarily, like one of the issues that the football team had for many years was exactly this, that the front office would take players that the coaching staff didn't necessarily want or need or know how to use or whatever. It's just like it didn't make sense. And that was part of their issue over time. It's different a little bit now. It feels, we'll see, we're only in year two under Ron Rivera, but since he is the coach, but also the final decision maker, whether that's good or bad, I don't always like one person sort of having both roles to a degree, but okay, at least he's going to be on board with what he thinks on both fronts. And here, I mean, Troy Brown is one of many, many candidates where it's just like the front office clearly liked this guy enough to pick him 15th. And it never felt for one second that he made sense for this coach. And that's the type of stuff that like gets you into trouble. You can't in the NFL, you can't miss on first round picks, but you have 7 rounds of players. And a lot of times we see starters or key contributors come in all these rounds. In the NBA, you basically have one round, right? I mean, the second round is a complete wild card, whatever, right? The first round, you cannot miss on the 15th pick in the draft. And I don't mean he has to become an all-star, but he has to play. He has to be in the rotation. He has to be something, or even a piece that you trade for something more. I was sort of impressed they were able to even get Gafford. But, that is a miss. And it feels like it's a miss primarily because the front office and the coaching staff were not on the same page. And that to me going forward is like a big component of this. Like I said, I don't necessarily put Jerome Robinson into that category, but yes, why? Like great point. I'd forgotten. Why are you playing Jerome Robinson over Troy Brown when one guy you've established is more of your future than the other guy is? Like, yeah, stuff like that is what is the stuff that drives me crazy.
All right, Ben, what do you got to plug before we wrap?
Well, I'll just mention on my podcast, the Standard Grimaldi podcast, I interviewed Stanford coach David Shaw today. Talked about some of his players in the draft and some other NFL topics and so on. It was really good. He's a really interesting guy to talk to. So I would just say check that out, subscribe to that. And obviously a lot of NFL draft stuff going on The Athletic. So if you're subscribing to Fred, you get me as well, or vice versa, whatever. So check that out.
Great. Subscribe to Wizards After Dark. If you're just randomly listening to this episode, tell your friends about the podcast. If you really love the podcast, you can go on iTunes. You can leave a review. You can give 5 stars. The written reviews always help. As I always say, they help more than you might realize. Although if you hear me do this at the end of every episode twice a week, then they probably help exactly as much as you would realize. You can subscribe to The Athletic for $3.99 a month. We're no longer doing the $1 a month deal, but you can sign up for just $3.99 a month if you want great sports coverage. My colleagues are amazing. Ben does an incredible job covering the football team and jumping in on Wizards coverage every once in a while. And if you go to theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark, you can sign up for $3.99 a month, and that's not just for my coverage. It's not just for Wizards After Dark. That is for everything. That is a full subscription of The Athletic, and it gets you every sport, every writer, every podcast ad-free. Totally worth it, in my opinion. I was a subscriber before I started working at The Athletic. Just go to theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark, and you can sign up there. $3.99 a month. Totally worth it. I will be back with a new episode next week. I'll talk to you guys then.